From KLCC Media, this is the Oregon Grapevine. I'm Barbara Dellenbach. The Oregon Grapevine highlights fresh-pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live. Elizabeth Quinn is a fiber artist, arts advocate and activist, and recently appointed member of the Oregon Arts Commission. Thanks so much, Elizabeth, for being on the Oregon Grapevine.
Well, thank you, Barb. It's great.
You have had a varied path, not just through life, but certainly to get to the arts. So launch in. Talk a little about your personal experience with art and what you're doing now.
Well, simply said, I just have never been able to accomplish anything unless it's had the arts involved. From a young age, I didn't do great in school. I did great in arts. Starting in the second grade, I got an award in the second grade. And so when I have tried to sort of do other things, I kind of launched into conservation a little bit and thought, the only way I can have this conversation is through the arts. So I tried to be a hand weaver for years. That's what I graduated from University of Oregon with a BS in art. And I came out as a hand weaver. And I was going to do that. But I found that rather isolating as a 20-year-old. So I started to get into other things. And my first arts job was in the Dalles. I was for a couple years the executive director of the Dalles Art Center, which was a terrific entry point. And for some reason, it gave me a whole lot of confidence to then later start my own nonprofit, for good or for bad. I started my own nonprofit literary visual arts magazine called High Desert Journal, which published twice a year. And that was really expressing widely as I could, that there are many, many cultural assets east of the Cascades out to the Rocky Mountains. I once saw a bumper sticker behind a man at a convenient market in Nevada. And, you know, he was living the life in Nevada in a very isolated place. And it was kind of a convenience store, used store. And the bumper sticker said, "Too ugly for LA and too stupid for New York." And I really didn't like reading that because I love the aesthetic of what this man was standing in. And I love the aesthetic outside of what he was standing in, that I just thought we can do better. And so that was a real motivation to show people and to relate to people in the desert, really, in this Intermountain West, that there is so much that people are creating and expressing and living and enjoying and struggling with. So for 10 years, I did that magazine, and then I handed it off to an editor, and he tried to continue it for, 10 more years online. So that was a rich experience.
You talked about kind of failing at other things and succeeding at art. I've had several conversations lately about just integrating a bunch of different things and how everything's pretty much connected. So would you go so far as to say that it was just because you weren't doing math in an artistic way, maybe? Maybe there's like the art of knitting, for instance, or the art of art can be this other thing. So it's kind of too bad to be pigeonholed into a conversation of like, I only am good at this.
100%. I mean, yeah, 100%. I love Fibonacci's numbers, right? Like, and if I had been learning math in a physical, visual, tangible way, I'm sure I would have responded much more to it in the school setting. And I'm just grateful that I had the fortitude to continue to find my way and to, I think, now at, late 50s, to be able to sort of cherish the assets that I have and the way that I learn. And actually, I think that's not a bad segue into sort of the other after High Desert Journal. I helped start an artist residency that was science and art focused. So yes, I mean, that was when I really started to have more conversation about multidisciplinary activities, and I got very excited about it. And after Playa, I went to Caldera in that services youth both in Central Oregon and in the Portland area. And the conversation is how to learn all kinds of things, multidisciplinary learning through the arts. So being able to bring a lot of different experiences into an art experience was really valuable, a valuable perspective for how we were doing the work we were doing. And we were focusing a lot on arts and ecology. So, in my little stint in conservation work was able to translate into some of the work that we did at Caldera. So being able to have founded an organization, helped someone found an organization, work for a founder-driven organization, and then continue on and helping some other founders find residencies has been a really, at the whole time, being exposed to learners and artists has been unbelievably rich.
I want to back up a minute, and you skipped over Playa and skipped over Caldera a little bit. I'd like to talk about those arts residencies. There's several around. I know they're probably throughout the world, but certainly there's Sitka, there's Fish Trap, there's a bunch of them that are like for writers, or they're for artists, or they're for this. Why are those important? Why give a person a week or 10 days or 6 weeks someplace to do art? It can feel, to play devil's advocate, a little bit kind of self-serving and selfish. So what's the value?
I oftentimes have thought that. And I actually met a woman, oh, that was the executive director at High Desert Museum, and her background was in accounting. And she said, "Well, I'd like to have a residency in accounting." And there's something to what she said. I mean, I think the value, I mean, first and foremost, I agree with Carl Gerassi, who started Gerassi down in California. And he said cleanly, simply, there are three ways to support the arts. You commission work, you buy their work, or you support the time it takes for people to make art. And residencies, and he started one of the, very foundational residency and inspirational residency in California. And I think that piece is very true, and it is important. Artists, I think, actually just this morning I was thinking about some work that I'm doing, and I was thinking about applying for some exhibitions. And my brain just launched into this space that's very separate from daily functioning, even daily functioning in the studio. Like, I'll go into my studio and I'm working on things, but to have this space that allowed me for 10 minutes to just go somewhere and visualize what I'm working on and play with the idea for a little bit. Residency, you get steeped in that space, and removing yourself from your home and your regular studio is, I mean, it works in a whole lot of different ways, but one way that I've seen it work is it allows people the space they need to go in different directions, to think about their work in new ways. And sometimes it doesn't even, something doesn't come out of that for years to come. And that is the faith that I think Carl Gerassi was imploring, and the residency field has continued to implore, is, take this time and space. There are thousands of residencies now, thousands, and it's unbelievable to a certain degree. I think it's like, wow, that's a lot. But the plus side of that is that you can pretty much find a residency for anything you're doing, and for anyone, and for different situations. Some are stipend, some are not stipend. There's just a, and that's wonderful. There's so many opportunities for people to explore in different lengths and different locations. And what I've gotten out of witnessing residencies is unbelievable. That is an education that you can't have in a academic setting. It's only by witness. And I'm so grateful to have witnessed all that I have in residency, because now I have a studio practice that I feel very unencumbered by watching other people, struggle and fail and try again and keep going, and knowing people for a long period of time because of knowing them in residency and seeing where they've gone, I just really trust myself and I trust other artists in their process and progress.
What are you working on in your studio?
I have gone in a direction completely unexpected when I started in the studio. I'm doing fiber arts. Right now I'm having a conversation about sort of industrialization, where it came from and where it might go. And it's kind of a bleak picture of where it might go, but in the same degree, it's thinking about like if we can't get the materials we usually work with, what will we gather? What will we gather from the debris is kind of what I'm having the conversation about. So I'm working with linen since linen was the first mass-produced object internationally. And I'm using a lot of rust. And I was just, thinking about a friend's yard today who where she has so much rust. You know this friend. And I love that yard. And I aspire my yard to look like hers. So I'm using bound objects and I'm weaving and coil weaving and doing all kinds of wild things.
Not to throw her under the bus, but that particular friend leaves town some of the time and the yard's still there. So.
Oh, there we go. I need to get her schedule tied in better.
I'd like to talk a little about the intersection between art and science and what you've kind of done around that, or what you've seen around that, or how you have nurtured that and experienced other people going through that process.
One thing I'm impressed with currently, or a couple things I'm impressed with currently, I think the conversations have been. I feel like I've been engaged in the conversation for a long time. At the annual conference of artist communities, the field of artist residencies, we have an annual conference every year. And every year there'd be a pre-conference on art and ecology. It's a little more niche than overall science, but the conversation always left me a little dry and bland. And maybe I wanted too much. But then I met a woman who also felt as I did. We witnessed a pre-conference and I turned to her and said, I just want to see more happening. And she said, no kidding. And so we ended up actually having a conference, a small conference back in Virginia, where we really dug into what is the spectrum of engagement of art and science, and what are some points we can name on the spectrum? And then what could the benchmarks look like for that? And that was incredibly fruitful. It was a group of really smart, interesting artists and scientists. And we really made some tracks and we were going to continue the conversation. And I'm sure, as you've heard many times in interviewing people, and then COVID happened. So it really got hung up. Yet, you know how things also work is when something's happening over in one area of the country or world, it's also happening elsewhere. So I don't think the conversation was for naught. And there are rich things happening on that spectrum, whether that's art and science actually informing one another and learning from each other and pushing each field forward, or if it's giving more information to the public through the arts so that people can digest science in different ways and more accessible ways. If it's learning, there's just a lot happening. And Playa has, now I think it's 2 years running now. They're doing a really valuable series. It's a residency, themed residency about wildfire. So artists come in and they meet with people who are working in fish and wildlife, people who are working for Forest Service, people who are ranchers, different ways that people are dealing with, mitigating, and emotionally dealing with wildfire and learning more and more and more about it. And then they're producing work that goes back to the community in different ways. And I think it's terrific. I also say Praxis in Corvallis is doing amazing work in this area. And admirable. I can't name their programs at this moment, but they're on my list of organizations I need to learn more about. And I have their app on my phone now, so I look every so often, but really, really fantastic. I think more, I mean, the more interdisciplinary work that happens, Pine Meadow Center for Art and Agriculture also does. I love that mix of art and agriculture. And there's other conversations that come into that, the sciences, the conservation, history, legacy, all kinds of conversations that happen there too. So that's the stuff that excites me the most. I haven't exposed myself enough in my own studio practice to the intersections, but that might be my next pivot.
And for people who don't know that we're Playa is in kind of central eastern Oregon, I guess you would say, and it's a on Summer Lake, correct?
That's
And
right.
so just for people who are looking it up, going, what is that? It does mean beach, but that's not what we're talking about in
Right.
this
It
particular
means the kind
case.
of the shore, the edges.
You also are a commissioner of the Oregon Arts Commission, a newly minted commissioner. Can you talk a little about what that commission does and what you hope to either learn or bring or see around it?
Well, right now, my understanding is that the commissioners all help steward the monies that go out to organizations. I'm actually going to be on the arts learning panel here pretty soon, which I'm really excited about. I've received grants from Oregon Arts Commission. I've been a panelist on grants, so to be in a different seat is really, really exciting to me and sweet. I love that I can do this. So stewarding certainly grant monies, but also finding ways to support artists in the state, in all kinds of ways, maybe in ways that aren't always fiscal. So I think that's ahead. As any board, it's kind of operates like a board of directors in a way. As any board, there are different issues that come up that have to do with the functioning of and the trying to take things to the legislature and advocating for. So there's a lot of that. And I'm really honored and pleased to be on the commission. It wasn't something that was on my radar, but I was sort of getting to a place of, okay, I'm pretty good in my studio. I don't have to preserve every minute for it. I can have a little more time for other things. And that it just sort of happened. And I thought, oh, this is perfect. Exactly. I feel really, I always have felt, I'm born and raised in Oregon, and I've lived on the east side of the mountains most of my life. And I've always felt a real desire to have greater understanding between the regions in the state and the communities in the state. There's always the idea that Portland is the generator and having a lot of control. And that is true in a lot of ways. But I think that the arts is a perfect avenue to be able to learn about each other more inclusively, and in a stronger, deeper way.
There is a term that I have heard other places, and I also have heard from and kind of about you, I guess, which is place-based art. And I'd like you to explain a little of what that is and how that is for you.
Oh, that's such a rich place, area to talk about. I mean, High Desert Journal was very much that. Like, people would ask me, well, what are you doing for your art? And I would say, I'm doing High Desert Journal. That is my place-based expression, artistic expression. And each one was, absolutely, each issue was. I mean, I really think that place is so inclusive and so much can be said by sort of the bucket of place-based art. It can be your histories, other histories. It can be, I mean, there's so many stories there. I'm not at, to tell you the truth, Barb, I was just looking at a call, I think that Praxis has, and it said, how do you express a place in Oregon? And I thought, yeah, how do you? Like, how do you not? Like, where's the line? I'm not sure so much where the line is. And at High Desert Journal, Said that people who were outside of the area that l didn't live within the Intermountain West could submit things that had a theme of, oftentimes that was dead horses. I don't know why. And or turkey vultures. And the other and people that were living in the area could submit anything. So this idea that, all of our stories in a place are that are place-based art. So I have a deep belief in Gerald Ramsay quote, which is, I believe in the story, memory, and imagination. No, I believe in the ecology of story, memory, and imagination. And that's to me place-based art.
What inspires you to do the work you do?
Physically, like I'll start with physically. Like I'm a pretty high energy person, so physically I need to be doing something. Fiddle, like Barb, I have my crochet right here. like it's always at my meetings. I'm always, if I don't have to be on a screen, I'm usually fiddling. I'm making things with my hands. I love to make things. I love to make food. I love to make a garden. I love to make, right? I love to make clothes. I love to make all kinds of things, rugs. And then I think on another level, I just find the world to be incredibly curious. And I mean that in a full way. Like the things that repel me, I find curious, along with the things I find beautiful. So I'm always kind of, I think I'm always kind of having that conversation. I don't really make beautiful things, I don't think. I can, I do sometimes make beautiful things, but I'm really interested in just what something wants to be and what that material sort of in a raw way expresses to me.
I immediately jump on to, therefore, you have to define what is beautiful, because I've seen your art and some of it is
Oh.
very beautiful. And
Thank
there's a
you.
whole definition of how, what, you know, is, does it mean it enhances something or just because it's
Yeah.
classically beautiful or, but that's a very long
Yes,
and different conversation. But
right.
I'll say, I don't agree with you there,
Okay,
Elizabeth. And is there anything you're working on kind of out of the ordinary at this point or anything people should know before we, before we kind of go about what's out there in your thinking? For
I
instance, I
mean,
know you're a birder. So is there something related? Is there something
Birding is
related?
always, I wish I was just thinking about birds this morning because I was thinking about the creative process. Birding is so interesting because you work really hard to see a certain bird. This just happened to me. For 13 years, I wanted to see the rose-breasted grosbeak. I would see it show up on the bird list out at Mal here, and I'd think, oh, I'm only 3 hours from there. I should go, I should go, I should go. Finally, I get out there. It happens to be showing up, rose-breasted grosbeak. And I think, oh great, oh great, oh great. And we go and set up camp, and I go to pay, and I'm walking back, and there's a man with a camera, and I looked, and I was like, there it is. Like that's when you least expect it. Just go. I just read a quote by Octavia Butler also, which she was talking about strive in everything, and I thought, I love that word strive because it doesn't. For me, it doesn't have any judgment to it. And I was like, yeah, smooth, easy striving is when you're walking after paying your camp fee back to your camp and you see the bird. That's just, I love that flow. And art process is the same for me. Like, and High Desert Journal was every creative thing I've done is when I, like, you bring your knowledge, you bring your skills, you bring your emotions, and then let the rest happen. The bird will appear. So, birding is amazing to me.
Thank you so much, Elizabeth
Thank you.
Quinn, for being on the Oregon Grapevine and doing the work you're doing. And I look forward to seeing more of the beautiful things you create and having a longer conversation.
Thank you. I appreciate it so much, Barb.
You've been listening to KLCC Media's The Oregon Grapevine, fresh pressed conversations with people who are actively and passionately creating the present and future in which they wish to live.